In a world where uncertainty reigns supreme, where shadows of chaos dance at every turn, one truth emerges unyielding. Preparation is not a luxury, but a lifeline. Behold the Wellness Company, a beacon of readiness amidst the tempestuous seas of fate. Envision a sanctuary of tranquility, where the tumult of unforeseen medical crises finds no purchase. The Wellness Company's Medical Emergency Kit stands as a bastion of assurance, a fortress of resilience against the unseen foes of health. Within its sacred confines lie the tools of salvation. Ivermectin, to ward off the insidious whispers of disease. Emergency antibiotics, to quell the raging storms of infection. Antivirals, to vanquish the relentless tides of contagion, and more. The Wellness Company Medical Emergency Kit is not merely a collection of supplies, it is the embodiment of preparedness itself. Crafted by the hands of esteemed healers led by luminaries such as Dr. Peter McCullough, Dr. James Thorpe, Dr. Harvey Risch, and Dr. Drew Pinsky, this kit stands as the pinnacle of safety, the zenith of prevention. These truth-seeking doctors have forged a testament to vigilance, a testament to the unwavering pursuit of well-being. Embrace the certainty that comes from being armed against adversity. Embrace the Wellness Company, for in its embrace lies the promise of resilience, the promise of a brighter tomorrow amidst the chaos of today. Don't wait for the next crisis to strike. Visit twc.health/strangeplanet and use promo code STRANGEPLANET for an exclusive 10% discount. Prepare today and rest easy tomorrow.
This is not the sound of a stream running through the mountains. It's water from a leaking pipe trickling down a stairway. That's not a frog splashing into a lake. It's a piece of sheetrock falling into a puddle on a kitchen floor. And that's not a hiker taking a deep breath of mountain air. It's a homeowner gasping at the sight of a $12,000 water damage repair bill. 40% of homeowners have experienced water damage. Protect your home with the Moen Smart Water Monitor and Shutoff. Moen.
This episode is brought to you by Essentia. A better you starts with better hydration. Essentia is on a mission to inspire people to do what matters most. Their proprietary ionization process transforms water from any source into ionized alkaline water, providing water that's 99.9% pure with a pH of 9.5 or higher. Essentia overachieving H2O, the number one ionized alkaline water. Shop now.
Conspiracy Unlimited with Richard Serrett.
The journey that most of us face in our lives and the choices that we have and the signs and the signals that are always there, sometimes we choose to ignore because it's more convenient to live in the paradigm that we've created for ourselves. So you'll find, as sort of life goes on, that the signs and the signals to put you back on your path get louder and louder if you don't pay attention.
If you enjoy Conspiracy Unlimited, why not become a Conspiracy Unlimited Plus member? For just $1.99 per month, you'll gain access to two bonus, exclusive, commercial-free episodes per month, plus access to my back catalog of episodes. To subscribe, just go to conspiracyunlimitedpodcast.com and click on Gain Access to Premium Episodes. Again, go to conspiracyunlimitedpodcast.com and click on Get Access to Premium Episodes, or click on the link in the episode notes. Conspiracy Unlimited Plus for less than $2 per month. Why not sign up today?
Conspiracy Unlimited with Richard Serrett. Pursuing the truth wherever it leads. Exposing evil and corruption and the secret machinations of powerful elites. Revealing the high strangeness beneath the surface of our supposed reality. Coming to you from his studio beneath the stairs, here's Richard Serrett.
In the not-so-distant future, when someone is able, using nanotechnology, to cure diseases, things like blindness, for example, well, that day is coming. In fact, it may be fast approaching. It's also the subject of a book by my guest, Maximilian Pereira. Born in London, England, educated at Bancroft School, where his love of the written word was inspired by his English teacher, Maximilian studied film at York University here in Toronto, where he currently resides. And he is the author of Second Sight, Maximilian, how are you?
I'm fine, thank you, Richard. Great to be on.
Pleasure to have you. How did you get involved or interested in nanotechnology?
I would say it's the widget that is necessary for the book. There were other subjects that I wanted to address within the book, and that's what I needed to get the job done without giving anything away, of course.
And are you sort of an amateur scientist? Do you have a technical understanding of how nanotechnology works?
I did some research into nanotechnology, but I would say I'm more of an avid science fiction fan. So I try to keep as vague as possible when I deal with the science, because obviously I don't want to have any flaws in the book. But, I did research. I believe the first series about nanotechnology were in the 50s in the University of Japan or something like that. So we're getting there, clearly, as a society right now. But it was more or less a widget.
Right, and a great premise, to be sure. And you mentioned science fiction, and as you also noted, science is quickly catching up. I was reading recently about how nanotechnology, I guess the first step is they're looking at creating certain proteins which could reverse cataracts. So,
right.
and there are people, obviously, that's one of the number one causes of blindness in the world. Cataracts, and so that may be, the first type of blindness that's conquered using nanotechnology was developed or being developed.
I actually believe in England right now they're very, very close to actually getting that technology. I saw like a little ticker tape, like a headline on News Now the other day, and I'm like, okay, when I started writing this book, it's a science fiction novel. It's not something that I anticipated happening within my lifetime, or at least not this soon. But, as with many other things in our society, technology is really advancing at an exponential rate.
Right. Well, let's give people a sense of sort of a thumbnail sketch of what happens in the book. I mean, it is titled Second Sight. And you have this brilliant young scientist who, as we say, develops the nanotechnology to cure blindness. Tell us a little bit more.
Well, the question is that we, as a human being, we see less than 1% of the electromagnetic spectrum, which makes us virtually blind. So the question is what if you could use technology to enhance the eye, what else would that technology see? We are conditioned from children, for example, you know, Christmas is, you have Santa Claus and that's your reality. And then you grow up and you're educated at school, and then that's your reality. And as you get older, you discover new realities, whether it be through religion or science or what have you. So we have a personal bias. We have filters in the way that we actually look at the world around us. But technology doesn't have that, so it would observe what's out there in the same way that, an X-ray scanner doesn't say, well, I can't see that because I'm not supposed to. It sees it because it's programmed to. So that's the premise of the book. What else would this technology see without that social bias?
It's a great concept. It's almost a metaphor, this blindness, for, I guess, cleansing or opening of the third eye and the pineal gland.
Exactly. And there's also something else. I mean, I've had my fair share of experiences with the paranormal and what have you, but one of the real catalysts for writing this book was there's a shelter downtown, and I used to walk down Tecumseh Street, and on several occasions I observed this woman just hurling abuse at somebody or something or someone across the road at this church that I've never seen opened. Now, personally, when I walk past this church, it always gave me the heebie-jeebies. My hair was standing in. I didn't like walking past it at night. But I was like, what is this woman seeing? And is she crazy? Or are we perceiving people to be crazy because they actually see things that we can't? And I thought maybe she could see something. I mean, she was very vehement in her attack on whoever she was shouting at across the street, right? So that sort of got me thinking. You start looking at things like animal ESP, like how is it a dog can go to the front door and wait for its master when the car's, a mile away? Like, what do they see? What do they know? As a human, the human species is relatively feeble when it comes to survival on this planet as compared to our, you know, fellow animals. These guys can see at night and we can't, right? So all of these things got me thinking about what's actually out there. You know, what happens if people aren't actually mad? What happens if they can actually see and hear things that the majority of us who conform to societal norms can't see, basically?
Maximilian, you mentioned that you've had some paranormal encounters that may have perhaps motivated you to write this. Yeah, inspired you to write this book. What, can we talk a little bit about what you saw or what you think you saw?
Well, one, you know, I grew up just on the sort of edge of East London in what's known as the Greenbelt in Epping Forest, near Epping Forest. And this place is reputed to be very, very haunted. Anyway, I was coming back one night from a pub, and there was a woman standing across the road. It's just a small road, two lanes, one each way. And she walked across the road to me and asked me if I knew where there was a hotel. So I said, oh, yeah, you know, there's the Roebuck Inn's just down the road. I'm walking that way. I'll show you. So we got walking and talking, and I said to her, where have you been tonight? Thinking she's probably at a bar or something. And just to give you an idea, it's very, very quiet. It's late at night. There's not a car in sight. There's lots of forest around with a few houses behind trees and what have you. And we're walking. And I said, you know, where have you been tonight? She said, oh, at the Mayfield. And the Mayfield was what I thought was a high-end abortion clinic. So I didn't ask any more questions.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, so as we were walking, I sort of realized that I'm walking with a strange woman towards what you can only see as forest. I know that there are roads that go off behind the trees,
right,
but she's a stranger and she doesn't know. So I said, okay, you see where that phone box is? As soon as you get there, you'll see a sign, and that's where the Roebuck Inn is. So I tried to cross the road, and I'd look back to point and show her the direction of the road, and she was gone.
Mm.
Absolutely gone. And there was nowhere for her to go. The only place she could have done is jump over some 5-foot bushes into the front garden of someone's house. And I would have heard that and seen it. And I looked both ways up and down the street.
Right.
And then I think I broke the land speed record that night and ran back home. Right. And funny enough, 2 years ago, a friend of mine was visiting me from London, and he said that a friend of his had a cab and picked up a woman at the same spot who asked her to go in the general direction towards Loughton or what have you, which is the, you know, the same direction I was walking in.
Right.
And she disappeared in the back seat of his car.
Oh,
I never told my friend this. He told me this, and this happened, well, over 20 years ago with me. So that was a shocker for me, because here I am walking and talking with someone. Do I concede the possibility that she was very stealth and hid behind a bush? Possibly. But I know what I felt. I know what I saw.
And now, looking back, do you remember anything? I mean, at the time, you just thought it was a normal, perfectly normal human being. But then, in light of what happened, do you recall anything unusual about the way she looked? Her dress, her skin?
I mean, I didn't pay too much attention. She was fairly well-dressed. I remember that. You know, wearing heels, heels on that time. Nothing that was out of the ordinary at the time. And that's really another thing as well. If she's wearing heels, how could she have jumped anywhere?
Mm-hmm.
So nothing out of the ordinary. And I mean, obviously I had a few at the pub, so I was more interested in just getting home. But yeah, that was one major event in my life. And there are other, you know, smaller events where you can feel presences, you know, around you, and you know, the hairs stand up on your arms and on the back of your neck, and you go, okay, what's that, and why do we do that? You know, why do humans have that sort of autonomic response, right? So what's actually there? What can't we see?
Right. I mean, I've always wondered. I've had one paranormal experience in my life, and I won't bore you with it. I've told the story many times on the radio, but it's it involved seeing my doppelganger just after my father was laid to rest.
Wow.
But that's sort of the long story short. But other than that, I mean, I'm probably one of the least intuitive people. I've never seen a UFO. I've never seen what I would call a ghost.
Right.
And I've always wondered, you know, the people that do, are their brains somehow wired differently? Does it have to do with their pineal gland? Is mine so calcified, you know, that I'm not able to see these things? What do you think
you know
it is?
What? It's interesting. I think that I think that basically it depends on your brain. As you get older, your brain becomes hardwired, right? And so you have to have major shifts in knowledge or consciousness to really look at the world differently. Intellectually, we can obviously do that, but on a sort of spiritual feeling level, I think certain experiences can shift you in a certain way to be more open to receiving information. I grew up as a Christian, and I wouldn't say a devout Christian. I've been to church a few times. My parents were Christian, but again, not devout. But when I went to see the Vatican at 13 years of age, and it just completely rocked me. I sort of looked around. I said, you know, these guys can solve world hunger in a heartbeat. There's so much opulence here. And it started making me question what my reality was. And I was lucky a year later, I got to go and see the pyramids and go and see the birthplace of Christ. And that was a hugely informative and eye-opening trip for me. So I started to look at the world in a different place. And I've always been fascinated with the paranormal. And I can take that back to a TV series that used to be on in England on the BBC called Arthur C. Clarke and His World of Strange Powers. And that fascinated me as a kid. So maybe I was just more open to it. And also growing up in London, you know, very old society, ghosts come with the territory, right?
Right, absolutely. In the book, the scientist who creates this technology, nanotechnology to cure blindness, obviously becomes, you know, wrapped up in a lot of subterfuge and intrigue and betrayal.
Mm-hmm.
Which is another kind of interesting metaphor because, you know, the idea for those with eyes to see and those who search for the truth and see things sort of the way they are, and are, you know, the old emperor has no clothes,
right,
bit, often are targeted for persecution. Is that sort of the, am I sort of going in the right direction in terms of the metaphor that you were working there?
The protagonist's journey is a very personal one, and I try to speak to the trials and tribulations that most people have in their lives. You know, we, you know, Star Wars being the obvious, you know, you choose between the light and the dark side and all that kind of stuff. I mean, I think Joseph Campbell said there are only 9 human stories, right? So you don't really stray too much far off of that. So what I was trying to do with the protagonist is basically show the journey that most of us face in our lives and the choices that we have and the signs and the signals that are always there. But sometimes we choose to ignore because it's more convenient to live in the paradigm that we've created for ourselves. So you'll find, I think, as sort of life goes on, that the signs and the signals to put you back on your path get louder and louder if you don't pay attention. And that's the sort of personal journey that I really wanted to explore with this character.
Just speaking generally about nanotechnology for mm-hmm. a moment, obviously radical nanotechnology is sort of tied up with the whole idea of transhumanism and mm-hmm. using technology to dramatically extend life, perhaps even a quest for immortality. How do you feel about the transhumanist movement? Do you see any, are there any red flags there for you?
Massive red flags. it's like the you know, the fear a number of years ago, you know, in certain conspiracy circles that the agenda was to microchip the population. You know, and it's the soft tiptoe, you know, like, you know, microchip your pets. The military soldiers are getting microchipped, and microchip your children so they can't get lost. And you know, it gets in through the back door, but no one's asking the question: if you can track this device, can you not therefore program it? And so I think if you start putting the human brain is already so susceptible to marketing and suggestion. If you put technology on top of that, then what's the point of the human experience? Because someone else with nefarious intent could more than likely program that person. All right, so I think there are massive red flags in maintaining one's autonomy and freedom, spiritual freedom, with doing that. I mean, I'm all for, you replace a hip or something like that, put a metal hip in or whatever the case may be, and you help someone in that way with their health. But When you start using this kind of technology, especially as I think as a species, we're not that mature as yet. We're still killing each other left, right, and center across the planet. So when you start introducing these game-changing technologies, there always seems to be the tendency to then use it to subjugate another set of human beings. So I don't think we've evolved enough yet as a species, or grown up enough, I should say, to start messing around with stuff like that.
I've had occasion to interview a gentleman, an author by the name of Jim Elvidge, on the program a number of times, and this is not his theory, but he had a sort of borrowing from other thinkers in this arena, the idea that we are living in a digital simulation, you know, the Matrix. And he talks about technology where you could bypass the optic nerve. For example, I mean, you know, he uses a sort of John Madden's NFL video game to sort of track the progress of the technology. And it's true, if you look at, say, John Madden's, it's almost impossible to tell the difference now between that video game and reality. And think about where we'll be in 5 years.
And it's frightening. I've seen the change in the sort of the young generation. I mean, everyone's plugged in. You sit on the subway, everyone is plugged in. It's very rare that you see someone reading a book, what happens. I mean, you've got films like Surrogates and obviously The Matrix. Yeah, I mean, what happens if someone does sit in a cubicle for a few days and live in an alternate world? I mean, I've had friends who I don't know the names of the video games, but you know, you create all of these worlds and you play with people all around the world. And they just sit in their rooms for days playing this alternate reality. And like, the reality is right outside your door. What are you doing? You know, each to their own. But yes, it is very frightening. I mean, according to David Icke, he believes that we live in a holographic universe, and this is a holographic simulation that has been programmed.
Right.
And very likely. Right.
And then imagine that they could, whoever they are, the designers of this holographic reality, they could bypass our optic nerve. And so what we think we're seeing, what we think we are perceiving, what we think is reality, is all being programmed.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, there are the theories that the planes that crashed into the Twin Towers were actually holograms, right? And they weren't actually real. And the towers blew up from the inside out. Right. I mean, who knows where we are really technologically? I mean, there was a guy called Leo Zagami. He claimed to be ex-Illuminati. And he said that the governments right now, or the Western governments, especially America, they're like 1,000 years ahead technologically from what we actually see out there. So who knows? It could be true. I mean, it could be that our reality is being completely manipulated. And that's one of the things I want to address in the book is, by who? Because if you look at our society, we're sort of spun this tale that we're these half apes that have evolved and are somehow stumbling through evolution, trying to figure it out with an economy and some religion. And the whole story doesn't really make sense. You know, every year new governments get elected, nothing really gets changed, and you know, poor people stay poor, and it's the same as it has been for the
Hindu wheel of life,
right? And it seems a bit tiresome for a so-called intelligent species. So could it be that we are being deliberately sort of held in this matrix, so to speak, and then the question becomes why? You know, why? What purpose would that serve to have a sleeping population? And why is it that anybody that steps up and says, "Hey, by the way, I don't think this is right," and, you know, the avatars of our age, you step up and try and show us that there's a greater reality, that there's a better way. These people get killed relatively quickly, right?
Exactly.
Very quickly. So, what do the powers that be fear? And if they fear, then why are we fearing? Right? Maybe we should just open our eyes and take a look at what's around us.
Maximilian Pereira is my guest, and the book is Second Sight, and it addresses a number of interesting issues. A brilliant young scientist who develops the nanotechnology to cure blindness. We'll come back and continue this conversation right after this. Stay with us.
It's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Have you ever wondered what it's like to bite into Nerds gummy clusters? They're fruity. They're tangy. They're gummy. And they're crunchy. Nerds gummy clusters, a union of fruity sweet gummy and tangy crunchy Nerds. Unleash your senses. Shop now at nerdscandy.com.
Welcome to the Canva guided meditation for stress at work. Impending deadline? Generate Canva presentations in seconds.
So fast.
Brainstorm got too big? Ooh. Summarize with AI in a click. Writer's block? Release with Canva Magic Write.
Magical.
Stress less and save time at canva.com. Designed for work.
Looking to invest? Start your journey by exploring exchange-traded funds with GlobalX ETFs. Exchange-traded funds, or ETFs for short, create baskets of stocks, bonds, and other assets that you can buy in a single trade. GlobalX specializes in ETFs that track emerging trends, like the rise of artificial intelligence, as well as strategies aimed to generate income potential. Visit GlobalXETFs.com to discover how you can get started.
Reduce stress and enhance your immune system. ESS 60 from C60 Evo. C60 is the carbon 60 molecule known to deliver more than 172 times the power of vitamin C. 172 times. ESS 60 is the purest form of C60, a known antiviral, antibacterial, and anti-inflammatory remedy that works. ESS 60 neutralizes free radicals from cell metabolization and external toxins to help minimize inflammation and maximize detoxification. Further, people report better sleep, more energy, and renewed mental clarity when they take our ESS 60 organic oil. To order your miracle molecule ESS 60, click on the C60 Evo link in the episode notes for this podcast, or go to c60evo.com/Richard-Serrett. C60evo.com/Richard-Serrett. Buy now and save 10% by using the coupon code EVRS at checkout. Again, use the coupon code EVRS at checkout.
Theoretical physicists say that there is as many as 12 hyperdimensions. Here are just three of them. Conspiracy Unlimited. Conspiracy Unlimited. Conspiracy Unlimited. Pretty cool, huh? Here's an extra one. Conspiracy Unlimited. Hey, how about one more? Conspiracy Unlimited. And the great thing is we have 6 hyperdimensions left. Conspiracy Unlimited. 5.
Back to our conversation with Maximilian Pereira. The book is Second Sight. And talking about the use of nanotechnology to cure blindness. And this particular scientist who discovers this cure falls into a world of intrigue and betrayal. I mean, you can imagine the elites of this world, whoever they are, the archons that are controlling this little blue marble, how upset they would be if suddenly we could see things as they truly are. I suppose, short of using nanotechnology, and this is a technology that may not be available to many or most of us. There's also ayahuasca, which has been proven to open certain doors as well. Have you ever done any research on ayahuasca?
I understand that that was the route that started David Icke's journey.
Oh, is that right? I wasn't aware of that.
Yeah, that's back in the 1980s. I think he's going through a bad time in his life or something, and he went down to South America and he did the ritual, and that just opened him up to his path in life. I also have a friend that has recently done it. And we talked briefly. I mean, it's a very sacred ritual, so obviously you couldn't discuss too many things. But he sort of played me some music that he's created. It's pretty fantastic. So I am aware of it. Yes.
I interviewed a Dr. Charles Groben, at the UCLA Medical Center, who was using a synthetic form of magic mushrooms or sort of psilocybin, which was being used to ease end of life anxiety in terminally ill cancer patients. And I even talked to some of the patients. Same sort of thing. I mean, a profound spiritual experience they had while. And it did. It just wiped out all fear of death. It's a very, very liberating kind of effect. I mean,
are you aware of Dr. Michael Newton, PhD? Michael Newton.
Michael Newton. PhD. No, no.
He wrote a book called Journey of Souls. And I found, again, you know, with regards to death and perception of reality, this was a major consciousness shifter for me. This book, he does past life regressions, but he became curious to find out what happens between lives. He said, okay, you know, if someone's reincarnated in the 1800s and comes back in the mid-60s, what happened in the time in between? And he delved into this whole other world and really sort of looks at who we are as spiritual beings on what we would call the other side. And it seems that we have the choice when we come here, or we choose to come here. It's very much a university or a school, and that's why we come here. So going back to what you were saying about the guy at UCLA using the synthetic drugs to ease the fear, why do we have that fear? Why is there that fear of death? And it's instilled in us from birth. Why is there constant fear instilled in our in every society?
It's a wonderfully controlling. It's a controlling mechanism for sure.
Exactly right. So why? I mean, obviously, no one wants to die in a horrible way, but every account. That you read about, you know, past life regressions, there's very little pain for the most part. People, once they're gonna die, they pass on, and it's relatively quick. And loved ones are immediately there to support you, you know, unless bad things have happened. But so why the fear?
Any thoughts of turning Second Sight into a book, Max? Turning the book into a film?
Absolutely. When the editor was going through the book, she said to me, she said, it looks like this is designed to be a movie. So she put all the section breaks in to make it a lot easier for a treatment. So yes, absolutely. There are some discussions, some preliminary discussions that have taken place. So I'm waiting to hear back from some people. But yeah, that was the main aim, is to get it either as a television series or as a movie. I mean, my primary objective with this book is not only to entertain, but to let people ask questions. Just, you know, do your own research, basically. Ask questions. Say, hey, what if? You know? And then come to your own conclusions. Because I think if we sort of just look at the daily news and accept that as our reality, then consciousness is not going to shift too quickly.
We were talking about the pineal gland or the third eye, the brow chakra. It's said that the cannabis, marijuana, can activate the help turn on the third eye or the mind's eye, if you will. How much of the prohibition of marijuana and other drugs do you think is connected to sort of the elites not wanting us to wake up?
Probably a lot of it. I mean, a lot of drugs are dangerous, but I think with regards to marijuana, or, you know, using hemp in particular, the fact is that you can grow it everywhere, so anyone could be a farmer, so to speak, and so that makes it very hard to control the supply, and therefore very hard to tax it and make money from it. So I think you know, government seemed to be this intermediary body that protects the elite from us and you know, keeps us in our rightful place. So I can't speak to whether marijuana can do that for the pineal gland, but clearly, you know, the U.S. military were experimenting with LSD in the 60s and stuff like that. So they know that this stuff opens up a new doorway for us. So would they want to keep that away from us? Yeah, absolutely. But I think a lot of it is down to, with marijuana, I think it's down to the control of supply and the ability to make money off of it.
We were talking earlier about the paranormal, and you shared with us one of your paranormal encounters. And I have a number of paranormal researchers on the program, people like Rosemary Ellen Guiley, who's a full-time investigator, researcher, written over 60 books, some of the major encyclopedic works on the subject. And she talks to me frequently about what she perceives as this thinning of the veil between, you know, this dimension and others. And I'm wondering, you know, and she's doing this, she's part of this major survey on paranormal experiences. And she perceives that there is, again, this thinning of the veil. More and more people are having paranormal experiences, whether it's seeing UFOs, whether it's seeing ghosts, whether it's remembering past lives. What do you think is happening here?
I think that we are coming to the end of the great year. Or was it 26,000 years is the great year? We're finishing a massive cycle. You know, the Mayan calendar wasn't the end of time. It's the end of this cycle. I think, was it Plato that talked about the golden age of man when we lived for 900 years and we spoke to the animals? There's also the Book of Enoch that, you know, Enoch lived for 300-400 years or something like
right,
that.
So, right.
So, you know, after Atlantis, it would seem that there was the fall of man. There was some kind of dimensional shift. There was the fall of man, and we came down into the third dimension. So I think what's happening is a natural progression back into the fifth dimension. And, you know, just like the salmon swim back to their home at the end of every cycle, we're trying to get back home, which is to a more loving and higher frequency, a higher vibrational state, closer to the source or God or whatever you want to call that entity. So it's quite feasible that the powers that be that have made their home in this third dimension want to stay here and still be kings of the castle, because, you know, in the fifth dimension, things move a lot quicker and there's just love and no fear or hatred, so their use would be scuppered. So I think that's what's happening. I hope that's what's happening. And if you sort of look back 20 years or so, even just the discussion of any of these subject matters, people have thought you were crazy and out to lunch or, you know, taking some kind of drug. But it's coming into the general paradigm right now that what we've been told the nature of reality is not what it is at all. And it's up to people, I think, to discover their own reality or their own personal reality. And it's their responsibility, really, as opposed to just being passengers on the planet. We're all co-creating this story, and the question is why and to what end. I think to drive the species back to where it belongs, which is a more divine existence.
Well, if we go back 3,000 years, you know, to the time of the Old Testament, before the, you know, we were communing with angels,
exactly.
Prophets, you know, speaking directly with God, the age of miracles. So do you think we're getting back to that time?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, things can happen different ways. Yes, technology plays a part in it, but you know, there are healers out there that are doing miracles right now. I mean, I haven't seen a doctor in years, and I don't need to. Like, I go to homeopathic healing. People that don't even put their hands on me. If you know, get hurt playing a soccer game or something, and they heal you. Is that a miracle, or is it just using the energy, or someone understands how to manipulate that energy field around the body? Do we really understand the nature with which we live in, within which we live in? Because, you know, we're the only species on the planet that requires clothes. So are we actually native to this planet is a question. And are we hostile to this planet? You know, I think we have to look at our place on the planet as well. So and sort of balance out, so to speak, and live in more harmony with our surroundings and our fellow creatures on the planet.
You mentioned a paranormal experience. You said that was kind of the major one when you saw this, what appeared to be a ghost, walking along in East London, this forested region of East London. You've had others, though. Can you share any of those with me?
Absolutely. there were quite a few sightings at my fraternity house here in Toronto. One time, three of us were sitting in the living room, looking in three different directions, and all three of us heard someone walking down the back steps of the house. And I turned to look and saw a shadow. My friend, who was looking directly at it, saying, you know, I won't use the expletive, did you see that? And we all ran to where we heard someone walk down the steps, and no one was there. I've seen shadows in that house. My father died 10 years ago, and the night that he died, I could not sleep. And when I was finally falling asleep, I felt someone touch my hand, and it woke me up. And I got the phone call about 10 minutes later that he died. So, you know, that was one. I saw my grandmother standing at the end of my bed 2 weeks before she died. Same thing with my grandfather. So I've seen lots of things like that. And more often it's feelings as well, real uneasiness in certain places. But there's been a few.
You've had more than your share, that's for sure.
Yeah, sure.
How about UFOs? Ever had a sighting?
The only thing I'll say is I was in East London in a place called Stratford at my great aunt's place, and she lived, I think, about on the 13th floor. So from that vantage point, you could look out across northeast London to the hills where Woodford and Buckerstill, where I lived, were. And I saw what looked like, you know, your traditional sort of saucer-shaped vehicle slowly moving across where the hills were. I mean, this is, you know, a good 10, 15 miles away. So it could be anything. It could have been a hot air balloon or whatever the case may be. But this is at night time and it was glowing. Anyway, my aunt and I observed it for about, I'd say, 5-6 minutes. And I thought nothing more of it until I read the local newspapers and local people had reported seeing a UFO. So I'm like, well, if I'm looking from East London out this way and I thought it was a UFO, if people are looking directly up at it, maybe it's a UFO. But of course, you know, the Royal Air Force said no, it was a balloon, or, you know, the usual military cover-up.
Right, exactly. Swamp gas.
Yeah, exactly.
The light from a distant lighthouse. Exactly. You know what you saw.
My great aunt, God rest her soul, she was born in 1910, and she said, "Oh, that does look funny, doesn't it?"
Yes, in the typical British stoicism.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
Oh, isn't that an odd little thing?
Yeah.
Just give us without giving too much away in the book, Second Sight. Give us a little sense of what these patients that undergo this nanotechnology treatment and cure their blindness, what some of them see.
Wow. Okay. Without giving too much away, that's a tough one. I would say that it would challenge your views or challenge or confirm your views about religious beliefs. If you can imagine that, you know... that's a tough one, Richard.
That's all right. No, well, we'll leave it at that. It'll challenge your religious beliefs.
It will challenge your religious beliefs or confirm them.
All right.
And.
So, where can people get a copy of Second Sight?
You can get it anywhere. You can get it, here in Canada, obviously, Chapters in Indigo, Amazon.com, obviously. If you go to my website, www.maximilianpereira.com, there are various links that you can go through. Like, so for example, if you're in England, you can buy from Author House UK. In United States, you can buy from Barnes & Noble. It's available worldwide.
And what's the reaction to the book been like?
Really, really positive. All 5-star reviews so far.
Excellent. Let me spell the website, MaximilianPereira.com. That's MaximilianMilian, Maximilian, and then Pereira, P as in Peter, EREIRA, MaximilianPereira.com. Max, thanks so much for this. I really enjoyed our conversation.
Richard, thank you. It was an absolute pleasure.
All right. Second Sight, Maximilian Pereira.
A new Conspiracy Unlimited with Richard Serrett drops every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at conspiracyunlimitedpodcast.com. Blow your mind. That is all for now. Oh, and remember to share and give a 5-star review, because we have huge egos and need love. We're like cats. We need constant petting.